listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. It is May the 13th, and this is episode number 30, the Orlando Cepeda episode. And we will retire this episode as soon as we post it, so hopefully you get a chance to hear it. My name is Willie Dills. Of course, I'm joined by my fabulous two co-hosts. First, I'm going to introduce Mr. Ben Lee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm feeling a little like a baby bull today.
Yeah? Is that why you had to stuff your face with pot pie?
I was going to say I'm not entirely sure what that means, but I assume it has something to do with the fact that I didn't know where you guys were and I got confused and lonely, so I ate.
Okay, yeah. So Ben goes to food when he's feeling depressed, everybody.
Just, you know, it's Mother's Day. It's a good day to be a baby bull, right?
That's true. That's very true. And, of course, I'm also joined by Mr. Chad King. Chad, what's up, buddy?
I am mother effing mothered out today.
You are, huh?
That is way too many Mother's Day to celebrate in one day. It would start in the morning with my wife.
That's right.
Of course, we have two kids. And then
they have kids, right?
yeah. I'm a grandfather. That's right. How'd you know that? Just leaking that out now here on Torture Cast. You know, but only three people are going to hear that anyway. So it's not that big of a deal. Then we had breakfast with my parents. And then we drove all the way to goddamn Concord and had dinner with them. So it's one of those multi, you know, house kids crying, the whole thing. So, but happy Mother's Day, everybody. I wish I had a pink bat.
Absolutely. You know what? The pink bat seemed like to work Josh for Hamilton? The Giants. So.
I think they were 5-for-12 today with the pink bats.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like the Giants seem to always do well on Mother's Day. I don't know. Maybe that's just how I feel about it, but I've gone to a bunch of games on Mother's Day, and they always seem to pull out the win. So maybe we should just bring the pink bats out all the time.
My question is, did you bring your mother to your various games on Mother's Day?
Oh, hell no. No. Yeah, usually that's why. Today, though, what we did is we got some lunch down in Fisherman's Wharf area, and then we went to Musée Mécanique, which I don't know if you guys have been there before. It used to be down at the Cliff House, and now they've moved it over to Pier 45, and they have one of the coolest little old-school baseball games ever. It's basically...
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that? Yeah, so it's physical...
Kind of like a cross between pinball and...
Exactly, yeah. There's physical little players, but they all have, like, holes in front of them, and then there's a pitcher who has, like, a giant cup. And the umpire from behind just chucks a little silver ball into the cup, and then he pitches it, and you swing your bat, and if it goes into one of the fielder's holes, it's an out, and right. If it gets past them, it's like a single, double, triple, home run, whatever. And I had one inning where I had 5 runs. And I was like, man, the Giants can't seem to pull this off, and I could do it with my little crappy plastic bat and all these little fielders who don't move. Maybe the problem is the fielders move in Major League Baseball.
I think that's an unfair advantage.
It is. It really is, you know?
I think it needs to be like RBI baseball, where they automatically glue themselves to the bases, and if you bunt it just the right way, then it's going to be like an inside-the-park homer.
See, because our players don't move, and so it's just not fair. It's not fair that the other team gets players that move. So,
well, in fairness, we've had Joaquin Arias at third base, so it's been a little lopsided.
That's true.
But there's been some movement on the field.
And we're definitely going to talk about that as well. We got a lot to talk about. It's been a busy week of Giants baseball. And we're back to 500, which is, I guess you could say that's good news, I guess. I mean,
progress.
It's not good news necessarily, but when you were, you know, looking like, I mean, I honestly felt like the Giants were starting to get a little bit hard to watch over the last week. And winning 2 games against the Diamondbacks after losing 9 straight to them definitely made me feel a little bit better about things going forward. And 14 hits today. We'll see if that actually does anything as far as igniting the offense. But let's just go ahead and just jump right into a lot of the things that are going on. Now, this is something I noticed, and this was before yesterday's game that Matt Cain pitched, where he pitched brilliantly. He just played a good all-around baseball game yesterday. He broke up a double play, got a 2 RBI base knock. and pitched fantastically, and the Giants were able to pull out a win against a team that basically was owning them. For
hey, did you guys see that awesome Diamondbacks versus Matt Cain game yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah, Matt Cain took him on single. He was like, you know what, guys? The other 24 of you guys can't seem to beat these guys, so I'm just going to go ahead and do everything myself. But
yeah, it was like Arena League football. He was playing really both sides.
Yeah.
It was great.
But so Barry Zito was actually leading the starting rotation in ERA up until that game yesterday. And to me, that just feels like a true sign of the apocalypse. Like maybe the you know, the people talk about Snooki's baby's going to get born on December 21st. talking about, you know, all these things
Dick
that are
Clark.
Pointing. Yeah, Dick Clark dying, so it can't be any more New Year's, right? But you know what? The true sign of the apocalypse would be Barry Zito having a better ERA than Matt Cain and Tim Lincecum. That, to me, is a true sign of the apocalypse. So I got to say, I'm really stoked that Zito, you know, today had another quality start, which, you know, we all have talked about. We don't really think the quality start is a valid statistic necessarily, but it's something that's used by baseball. And he had another one. And, you know, over his career as a Giant, 6 innings, 3 earned runs is always been a good start for Zito. And he's able to keep us in games right now. So, you know, he's still got a 2.53 ERA, and I don't know. I don't know what the hell is going on.
Well, considering Lincecum's woes, I mean, if Zito was Zito of old, of last year or the last year before that,
yeah.
I mean, the Giants would easily be 3 or 4 games below 500 right now. So,
oh,
I mean, he's really been the saving grace for this team, to be honest.
He's,
well, conversely,
yeah,
he's switching with Lincecum in a way.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, Lincecum, I would expect to have the 2.53. And I'd
Which,
expect,
by the
oh,
no,
way,
he is,
five,
he is switching,
whatever.
That's right. But if he was the Zito of old, you know.
Yeah, with his normal 6-plus ERA at this point in the season.
Well, but, and in the area of the world ending, I would like to point out that Tim Lincecum has a higher ERA than Jeff Supon and Jamie Moyer right now.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, really, it's
in fairness,
those
Jeff
things.
Supon's only pitched 2 games, but, I mean, the fact remains.
We can't really figure Lincecum out right now at this point because his last start, he looked fantastic for 4 innings and then just got absolutely shelled. And it's just one of these things. He can't seem to lock it down for an entire start right now.
Except against Matt Kemp.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I struck him out 3 times.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he lost it quickly after that.
But against Tony Gwynn Jr., he's got him
yeah.
up too.
The offensive juggernaut.
Traditional change up in the dirt. He just, I mean, it was right down Broadway. I mean,
yeah.
He's just missing badly.
Yeah.
It's not,
yeah.
He didn't have a lot of walks this last start like he had in previous starts, but he clearly doesn't have the control. And that's his number one, you know, devil on his shoulder.
I almost feel like the movement has actually come up a little bit. It's just not, he can't
spot control it yet.
But
yeah,
it's moving more, I almost feel like.
No, he's dropping a lot of balls in the dirt, which really is kind of what works for him, and what has always worked for him is that changeup that falls off. But he needs to be able to locate the fastball to get to that pitch, and he needs to be able to use the slider to mix it in. And right now, he has no control over any of that. So it wasn't, he wasn't walking people, and he was pitching fantastically, but then what happened is he started leaving balls up, and that's, of course, when you get shelled, even by a guy like Tony Gwynn Jr., who... You know, Tony Gwynn Jr. has a pretty decent beard going this year, but he's not the guy that we should have been afraid of going into that series. And
no, obviously,
you know,
it's Juan Uribe.
Well, thank God though that we beat Clayton Kershaw, because if we did not win that game, which I fully did not expect to win that game, especially after getting shellacked by them, 9-1?
9-1 the first game.
Yeah, I was thinking, wow, we're about to get swept right now, because then you look and you see Kershaw coming up next. Not against Lincecum, and then you got Lincecum, who we don't know what we're going to get right now. So it did not look good, and thankfully we pulled one out of there, and then we won this series. So ended up being a 500 week, but we got to do a lot better than that, guys. We really do. So let's talk about some of the stuff that happened today, and I'd love to get your guys' take on this. So Charlie Culberson called up, second baseman. He's a guy we picked. What was it, 2007 or something like that? And we picked him fairly high in the draft. I think he was in the first round. And so he's been a guy that he's been kind of touted as somebody who may make it at some point. But he hasn't really been able to put together offensively what you need to in minor league baseball to make it look like you're a legitimate major league ball player. you know, he hasn't hit over.
It's only funny because that's exactly how it works.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to be hitting like 300 plus or whatever to feel like you're going to be.
Well, I mean, that's like the Justin Christian story.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. But, you know, he's hitting 284 this year in AAA, which is not horrible, but it's not great. And he's got 28 strikeouts in 36 games, which is not horrible, but it doesn't really speak to having a bunch of success when you get up here. But the fact remains that Connor Gillespie was kind of he hit the ball okay while he was here, but he didn't have a lot of results. And when Arias kind of showed up as the clearly the guy's got the glove, and he's also hit a bunch of really he's had a bunch of really great hits for the Giants already so far, and he's played himself into that job. So there really isn't room for Connor Gillespie at this point. And with Terrio not really ever showing himself as a viable option so far. And Burris falling off a little bit. The move makes sense. So he got
you
the start
and
today.
And Burris turning back into Emmanuel Burris.
Exactly. But. Yeah, exactly. But the move makes sense, I think, because Connor Gillespie doesn't really have a place right now on the team. But it got me to think. So we know Arias is going to be the third baseman until Pablo comes back. But it got me to start thinking, you know, Connor Gillespie is kind of touted. And is there even a place for him in the near future with this club? If Pablo's going to be the guy, which we all would much prefer Pablo over Connor Gillespie, right? And Buster Posey probably at some point moving to first, so Pablo can't really move to first either. Is there really a place for him, and should we see if we can get value for this guy? Like, what do you think? I kind of feel like Connor Gillespie's like there's a little bit of a dilemma there. There's not as big of a railroad or as big of a block at third base as there is at first base, but Pablo Sandoval is a pretty big obstacle to overcome if you're trying to make a club as a third baseman.
Yeah, and I don't know.
You can joke about his weight for once.
Yeah, that's true.
You got to fill his shoes. Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be converted to another infielder spot, but you got Crawford at short. And then second base is kind of up in the air right now, but so many candidates that, you can't say that Gillespie is going to be a valid candidate to be converted to that position, although it is a possibility. But I think you're right. I think that he's got a bit of a logjam in front of him. He's got guys signed at a contract who are, kind of stars on this team. So he could be valuable trade bait later this year.
I mean,
I don't feel like Gillespie really has
has
done enough to show that he'd be good at second or not at short. I feel Gillespie, he was an adequate defender. He had that one boot with horrible timing while Casilla was pitching, but for the most part,
that cost Kane another W.
Right. He wouldn't be Kane if we didn't cane him. But Gillespie, I feel like he doesn't have the versatility right now because he's really just a third baseman. We haven't seen him play almost any other position. I feel like he'd probably be serviceable at first, but we don't there's like 5 million guys that could be serviceable at first in this organization right now who are hitting better than Gillespie has been. Gillespie's a sandwich round pick. He was a pick. He was the pick after Buster Posey, as I recall.
And first round 2008, 37th overall,
round pick. And, Gillespie was one of those guys. He got signed with an agreement that he'd be brought up with a major league contract. I mean, he was called up to the majors his first year, but it was not at all merit-based. Everybody kind of went, why did Gillespie get called up? Bochy basically refused to start him, which is fine. Nobody really expected him to get started. It looked like there was an agreement that as part of his signing with the Giants that they'd start his clock early, basically. The upside of that, though, is that we have had to call Gillespie up a couple times, and he's been serviceable most of those times, but he's never been standout. I do feel like he had a better showing this time, but he's still not standing out for me. Gillespie's just kind of nondescript sometimes, and then he'll get one hit that's at a decent enough time, and then it'll sort of go back to not really standing out. And Arias, on the other hand, came up and immediately just kind of exploded at just the right time. And so now that even though he's sort of regressing back towards a little bit of an average, he's still riding that enough and not failing enough that he clearly looks like the better choice over Gillespie.
Yeah, no, I agree. But the thing is that the reason that I bring it up is because he is hitting .362 in AAA. The guy looks like he's legit. And I think another team would want to, there's definitely other teams that have holes at third base. And so we have holes at other places. And if, there's a move that can be made, I feel like this is a guy that is expendable. And also when he did get drafted, he got a fairly big bonus, and he was pretty well touted at that point. And you know, it just seems to me like he's a guy that might make sense just because there's not going to be a space for him at all in the near future unless Pablo finds another haymate bone that doesn't exist anymore. but, you know, I feel like it's pretty clear that the Giants aren't a complete team yet, you know. And at some point this year, we're going to probably have to add somebody to actually go back to the playoffs. So, you know, guys that we could get rid of? Who are the guys that are somebody that other teams would look at?
And I just really wanted to not be Miguel Tejada, who's now an Oriole. Just, nobody signed Miguel Tejada. And incidentally, can I throw in, can we not trade for Octavio Dotel? Because somebody always does. And I just really wanted to not be us.
I don't think that's going to happen, but definitely not Tejada.
And did you see Bill Hall was picked up by the Orioles as well in his first game?
That's
he homered.
Bill Hall and Miguel Tejada are buddies on the same team again. Please let it not happen. Please let it not happen. Please let it not happen.
I feel like at some point we're going to see this guy moved. I just think that's what's going to happen. It just makes a lot of sense. There's not a lot of other guys down there that we, I think, are willing to get rid of because of the fact that, you know, it's like we're not going to get rid of some of the pitching we have, and we're not going to get rid of some of the middle infielders that we have down there. That's not where we have the logjam. So I'm kind of expecting that to happen at some point.
You know, I'm looking at the roster and what's been changing in the last couple of weeks. And if you told me in spring training that in May, guys like Charlie Culberson, Connor Gillespie, Travis Blackley, Joaquin Arias, Shane Liu, or Lux, however you pronounce his name.
Lux. I'm hearing.
Amongst other roster changes, if you had told me that those guys were going to be on the roster in May, I would have thought the Giants would have been 10 games under 500 at this point.
Exactly.
What the hell happened to the roster? Did they like the plane crash or something?
Just think, guys, any minute we could see Nick Noonan.
Yeah. I didn't expect Eric Hacker to get a start yet at this point.
Hacker was really good last year. I will throw that out there. Hacker had a very good year last year, so I sort of could see where it was coming from, especially after Surkamp got hurt. But man, this whole season has, as they often do, has thrown itself in strange directions in a hurry.
Yeah, it really has. And we're kind of struggling to maintain where we're at until we get Pablo back and hopefully some other bats.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget that our 40-man roster still includes Eli Whiteside, Roger Kishnick, George Contos, and Dan Otero.
There you go.
We got some surprises left we can still pull out of our hats.
Another surprise to me was Bumgarner having a pretty bad outing against the Diamondbacks to start
About Arizona, man.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. They
not
had our number.
The desert.
They had our number until the last two games, but he just really it was funny. There was a couple of pitches. He gave up a home run on a pitch where they basically asked for the pitch up, and then he threw it exactly there, and then the dude hit it out. And I was like, is that really his strength? Is the high fastball? I don't know if that is. I would have much rather seen like a cutter on the inside or something like that. But he just like left that, and it was right to the glove, and got knocked out of the ballpark. And this is more frustration on Bumgarner's face than I've ever really seen. Even in the game where he got absolutely destroyed in a historic fashion, he really didn't look as upset as he seemed to look against the Diamondbacks. And I think he might be getting more expectations of himself. Like he might be starting to think of himself more as a guy who's supposed to go out and win. And when he gets shelled like that, and obviously the team's not hitting well enough that you can get shelled. He like a lot of frustration showed, and it was very interesting. I'd never seen that. It's always what people talk about. Oh, he never shows any emotion on the mound. You know, he handles everything like as if he's been there before, and he really didn't look like that. And it was very strange.
I feel like that's more Kane, but I get what you mean.
Well, it's you hear it all the time about Bumgarner that he never, you know, they're like, this guy's 22. What? This doesn't make sense. But he didn't look like that. He looked like he was letting him get to him, letting the stuff get to him, and it worried me just a little bit because that's kind of been his hallmark as a pitcher, is that he's just steady all the time. But you know, I don't know if it was just bad pitch calling by the catcher, but you know, it didn't look like he was missing his spots terribly the entire game. He just was getting shelled, you know. And the Diamondbacks can do that to a pitcher, obviously. I mean, the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, and in that dry air too. I mean, I'm going to talk
really
about
those aggressive
two
lineup.
Starts.
Yeah,
aggressive lineup. Good hitters. Good hitting ballpark. He's been shelled twice, both in Arizona. Other than that, he's been stellar. So, You know, maybe they just skip his starts when they go back to Arizona later this year.
There you go. But yeah, no, I mean,
just
you're
chip
right,
on his
Chad.
Shoulder,
it's
guys.
Not,
chip on his shoulder. It's not everybody likes
to,
narrative.
It's not time to panic or anything, but no, it was just strange to see that happen.
It's not time for Joe Panic or anything, guys.
Yeah, it's not time for Joe Panic.
He's not ready.
So let's talk about something that's apparently good news. Pablo seems to be healing really fast, but this is, of course, according to Pablo. I don't have any other... I don't really have any other evidence to support this, but apparently he's telling everybody that he's healing way faster than he did last time. But it's still probably going to be at least 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. 4 weeks is the low end of the prediction, which if he gets back in four, that's going to be pretty good.
He's feeling so good, he went to go get a tattoo.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Oh, I missed
with Hector Sanchez, who Pablo himself has dubbed the baby panda.
Yeah, he out together all the time. Like I've seen a bunch of tweets and pictures of them at like Alcatraz and all kinds of places.
No, the two of them and Gregor Blanco, it's the three Venezuelans. They like to go and chill.
Yeah, which is good. I
can't really argue
them.
With that. That's, yeah. I mean,
I'm happy to see those guys seem to have good chemistry because
any way to build chemistry on this team.
Yeah, these are guys who seem to be kind of Sanchez and Blanco kind of cementing themselves as guys that we need in the lineup. And, you know, Blanco had a fantastic game today, and he's shown that his speed is for real and that he's for real. And I'm just really happy to see him kind of finding his place. And he had some interesting comments today, too, after the game. He said that we've really turned it around. I think we have a great team. We just have to trust ourselves and play the game. If we do the little things, we're going to be a great team. And it's really cool to hear a rookie decide that he's going to kind of stand up for his teammates like that.
Blanco's not a rookie. He is new to
us, yeah.
He's new for us. But, and it is interesting to see a guy who's, you know, hasn't been with the team that long doing that. And I mean, he's one of those guys who he had some nice years with the Braves and with Casey, but he just never really had a chance to show off much. And I feel like we're finally maybe going to give him that chance to kind of be our next Andres Torres, essentially, you know, speedy guy, good defense, hits well. But he's, you know, he's younger, and I think that we've seen a better, I don't even know. It's just one of those things where in my gut, I'm like, well, you know, this could turn out better if we give him the chance, but I don't feel solid enough about like, because this and this and this, it's just this kind of like vague gut feeling that you may chalk up to like blind hope. I don't know, but there's something. There's
something there, yeah. And
I totally just lost my whole point, guys.
Well,
I'm sorry.
He's not. I mean, he's the speedy guy who can actually do a little bit of something behind the plate, and that's really good. And you're right. I mean, he did have fairly decent years. I mean,
Atlanta on and off. But
yeah, like he did play 144 games with Atlanta at one point, but he batted 250 at that in that season. But then with Atlanta and the Royals, he actually batted 310, 274, and you know this is 2 years ago. So
yeah, which is interesting because he had never really gotten a lot of playing time. He turned out to be injured partway through and just kind of felt really bad about ball after that for a while. And yet he had a pretty good season.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know it's nice to see him working his way back into baseball. And I think that he's definitely doing it in a good way. And he's you know he's doing that thing where he says all the right things, but he's also being really dynamic and trying to. He's catching attention every time that he comes up, either to the plate or on base or in the field. And I think that that's one of those like polarizing type figures that you need to kind of jumpstart a lineup, not even necessarily from an offensive spark standpoint, but just from a like an energetic get these guys going. You know, we sort of during a few games recently, we kind of seemed like we were starting to lull a little bit, not all the time. I mean, something, you know, Brandon Belt has smacked some serious triples and Joaquin Arias has made some stellar defensive plays, but just overall as a team, you've started to see guys kind of grind a little bit. And I feel like switching Blanco into the lineup has changed that a little bit just because when he moves, he's really electric.
Yeah, no, he definitely plays the game hard and I really like the kid. So, Posey, I think, is probably one of the main reasons if you saw a little bit of lethargicness out of the Giants. He seems to... And I heard, I think it was Kruka who brought this up, a scout mentioned that he looked tired. And he does look tired. He looks, I think it really isn't that, you know, his leg isn't fully recovered. I just think that it's, it's not his body and everything isn't ready for a full season of baseball every single day. And he's been playing almost every day, whether it's first or catcher.
Yeah, I kind of want to point out that first base doesn't really qualify as a day off.
No, exactly.
Per se, and that's something that the Giants won't catch, because other catchers they'll get a day off and they'll just have a day off. You know, J.P. Arencibia gives way to somebody else. Well, hey, that's a horrible comparison, but that's not the point. But, you know, it's like Posey will have his days and then suddenly he's at first base when Sanchez is catching and then he's back there again. You know, it's nice to have an everyday catcher, but that's not how you give somebody a rest.
No, exactly. He needs the full day. He needs to sit in the dugout and not venture onto the field, period. And
unless
he actually got that today.
Pinch hitting's okay, but you know.
But he got that today, and he's so far in May, he's batting 167.
Including 2 for his last 20.
Yeah, so definitely there's something going on there, because it looks like he's late on fastballs. It looks like he's getting fooled on breaking balls. There's been a couple of balls where it looked like he might have been able, even with his, with his slow speed, to leg out an infield single after kind of making a fielder range a little bit. But he's getting thrown out by a ton, he's just not running down the line either. So, the guy, he's definitely still performing behind the plate, blocking balls and things like that, doing the things he needs to do as a catcher. But he's just he just doesn't look like Buster Posey right now.
The ball just jumps off of his bat. And that's what I've noticed, is not just the average, but even, the outs he's making are very quiet outs.
Absolutely.
It's routine ground balls. It's routine fly balls. There's not a lot of, line drives that an outfielder runs down or an infielder dives for, that kind of thing. I mean, he's reaching for balls. He's late on fastballs. He's turning over outside curveballs and grounding out weakly to the left side, that kind of thing. He just doesn't look like himself.
No, absolutely not. So I think it's time to suck it up a little bit. And deal with the fact that, but the thing is, when you got Hector Sanchez behind the plate and Brett Pill at first base, it's still not Chris Stewart behind the plate and Aubrey Huff at first base. This is still a step up, so I think we can get away with giving this guy more days off. I don't think that that's,
Brett Pill has inserted himself into the conversation for giving Posey more days off.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, if you
and
say
so
Brandon
has Brandon Belt, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them, honestly, have had a really good week, even though people keep clamoring that Belt's, not making the transition as well as Brett Pill is, which I think is a load of crock. But, both of them have made really good cases to be left in at first base more often. And it's kind of like, what are you doing putting Posey at first? All you're really doing is wearing him out when we've got two guys who have the potential to at least do some damage and be a threat in that area.
Yeah, and give Posey a day off. So I think we need to start treating him a little bit more delicately while he gets back into playing shape, because it's not going to happen immediately. And we've kind of ridden him a little bit, and
we're
he's kind of forcing the issue. Yeah, he's been playing far too much. Another guy who probably is playing far too much considering his performance right now is Brandon Crawford, who also now has 8 errors. I just can't figure it out.
Is it still that low?
It feels like a lot more, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels like. Well, again, we talked about this last week, and he's blown a couple of double plays, which they're not classified as errors because he's still getting the put out at second. But if he bobbles the ball or bobbles a transition and then they don't get the relay to first in time, it's one of those tailor-made double plays. So, it feels like it's in the double digits, but he still leads the team. His fielding percentage is only 94% right now, which is extremely low for just an average made
for a shortstop who's primarily put in his defense, especially.
It's also contributing to the fact that the Giants are the worst team in the field right now in Major League Baseball. And it's really, really sad to watch this guy go out there, and it's like it's all in his head at this point. And he even said that he's been rushing plays that he doesn't have to rush. And he's really just not letting the game come to him.
We've seen that too,
He's not letting the game come to him. He's not playing in a natural sense. He's pressing himself a little bit right now. And I don't know if running him out there every day is actually good for him. I mean, people say that you got to let him play through it and things like that. But I'm not so sure that he needs to just be run out there every single day to feel like he's letting his teammates down. It's like maybe you just sit on a bench a couple days and then we'll bring you back in. Losing the spot, I don't think it's necessarily negative to sit down for a couple days.
Well, and Crawford had a decent game today for Crawford right now, which is to say it's
a base
normal Crawford would consider this a decent game. Curran Crawford has to consider this almost like progress, an extra base hit and no errors, which I almost think speaks more to, you know. But the thing is, he's had a couple games with no errors, and then it'll sort of rear its ugly head again. And so it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm not in the position I was before where I said, sure, let's just leave Brandon Crawford at short. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to get a lot iffier about that. And a lot of other people think that we're stupid for having Brandon Crawford in as our only shortstop in the first place. But it does say a lot that we don't have any other options in the organization at this point. Yeah. That says a lot to how we ended up in this spot. But, Crawford can be serviceable if he can clear his head up and not, like, if the defense comes back, Crawford is at least has a justification to be in the role he's in right now. But right now, it's really hard to justify putting Crawford in the lineup day in and day out.
No, it's true. And once we do get Pablo back, we do have the potential to shift Arias over to shortstop and let him take a few days there.
Very true.
Because he's clearly shown he can just kind of play wherever. I mean,
right. Yeah, Arias can even go in as a good second baseman there for us too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, but
While Pablo's gone, I mean, the alternatives aren't any better.
No.
You shift Arias over to shortstop and put Burris, who's currently the backup third baseman, according to Boach now, at third. You look at that and you go, it's not any better.
No, it really isn't. Yeah.
Nobody else is on the roster right now can play third for the most part. Unless the pitchers is telling you something.
Yeah, now that Gillespie's down, we really have no other option there. So Arias is going to be out there every day.
Burris has to be the backup infielder. I mean, Culberson is more of a second baseman.
Yep.
You know, Aubrey Huff is Aubrey Huff. Let's never use him anywhere except left field and first base again.
You know, at this point, it almost feels like we have 24 guys on the roster. I mean, Huff is just kind of a black hole on the roster.
Yeah, he's Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, he's not doing anything. He came in, he had a pinch hit single the other day.
Well, and I think that Bochy is kind of keeping an eye on Huff to see when he feels like Huff is mentally ready to come back into the lineup, which also may be a word for I'm saving Huff as a tactic in case things get so bad that I have to try something to put someone else into the roster. But, the fact remains, I mean, Huff is there and he serves a purpose. It's just that he's not in a position to serve that purpose yet. And that's making things rough because you're using the same guys over and over and you aren't getting the full depth that you should be out of the roster.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've gone back up to 12 pitchers again when we brought up Shane Lukes. So that also, cuts down the number of people we have. But when you look at the roster, like, you kind of squint at it for a minute and you go, it does occur to me that we're basically carrying 3 to 4 first basemen.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of rough.
And one that doesn't play. And one that doesn't play at all, basically.
Well, we have two guys who are really versatile infielders right now, and that's Burris and Arias.
Yeah. And then we have a bunch of guys who can really only play one spot, and we're trying to figure out how to fit everybody in. It's a very strange roster.
And we're getting them to not convincingly play left field sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Pill looks fantastic at first base. It really is a shame to have to stick him out there in left field.
Did you see him turn that double play?
Yeah, it was great. Sweet. Backhand, then great throw to second, and then but then the other day gets absolutely eaten up by a ball that's like high and over his head. It wasn't even really that well struck. It was just he took a horrible route to the ball and never looked comfortable tracking it down. And you just kind of feel bad for the guy because, his bat is what's keeping him up here and trying to get him into the lineup any way you can. But, it was sad to watch him play first base so well. And then in a day or two, he's going to be back out there struggling in left field.
And that's the thing, though. Pill and Belt both really had been known for their first base defense. That was part of their reputation when both of them were coming up. And it was things where you were like watching Pill at second, watching both of them in the outfield, and guys would just kind of go down to Fresno or San Jose or wherever they were playing and watch them and kind of go, they're really good first basemen. And other than that, they're just emergency situations only. And that's what we've been forced to do because both of them are first basemen and you can't have two first basemen no matter how hard you try.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, big hole somewhere else in the field.
We are trying as hard as it's possible to keep this many first basemen in the
We're going to try to start three a game at this point.
Yeah, exactly. The hot start the Giants had where we looked like maybe the offense was going to be a lot different this year, has quickly turned around, and now we are 12th in the National League overall in runs, which runs really is the biggest indicator you can look at. How many runs are you scoring? It doesn't really matter how, just are you scoring runs and are you not? That's really what makes the difference. And the Giants right now, we were at one point leading, and so to fall to 12th means that, we've been far worse than that over that span of time. So I don't know really what the answer is. Yeah, I don't really know what the answer is necessarily as far as to fix this, other than just hit better, please, everybody. Like the spot in the lineup that you're in, do a better job with that. But I think it really boils down to guys are not. I don't know if I feel like guys are in the ideal spots for them in this lineup. You know, I feel like we've got guys kind of hitting in odd positions. And people get moved around a lot, and I don't know if that really leads to, quality at bats up and down the lineup when guys are always in a different spot.
I kind of feel for Bochy though, because I mean, he pulled some, pretty good card tricks during the postseason run of 2010, and everybody thought he managed so masterfully and everything like that. But nowadays, it just seems to me it's kind of a bunch of nameless faces, mm-hmm. and he's got a bunch of cards. He's got like a deck of 20 cards or 18 cards or whatever it is. And he's like, all right, what's my lineup going to be today? And it's not quite random, but I mean, as far as who he puts in, I don't know how much he's really playing, the righty lefty, the history against this pitcher or what have you. But I mean, we have a different lineup almost every single day.
Yeah.
And it's not really producing different results over the last few weeks.
Well,
so
I feel
it seems to me there's not much he can do.
Yeah.
We're not really in a position where we can follow matchups and righty lefty, because we're one half of our lineup has been decimated. Thankfully, most of them temporarily this time, knock on wood. But, the fact remains that you've got a bunch of guys who aren't hitting. And when everybody's not hitting, you look at the matchups and you go, well, I don't know if that's going to work this time. after a certain point, you're trying anything to try and get these guys going. You put Belt second.
I like, though. I actually like Belt second.
I do
think he's
too,
a great
actually.
Second hitter. Yeah.
I think that he would make an excellent second hitter. Makes good contact, excellent eye. Yeah, I think that that's perfect, especially that Blanco Belt combination I thought was pretty stellar, and I'm hoping that comes back for our next game, even though I definitely can see the justification for having Pill in the lineup too. But mm-hmm. it's like, for the most part, I feel like Bochy at this point is almost just trying to throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And
yeah.
You kind of can't blame him. That's the reason. Like, we can talk all we want about lineup consistency and trying to find it, and that's good. But the fact remains that when you look like up and down the team, nobody's hitting but Melky Cabrera.
Yeah, yeah. But look at a team like, okay, so St. Louis is the team with the most runs scored in the National League right now, and that lineup is pretty fairly well set.
They're scoring the most runs in the National League right now.
Well, true, but I think they have a guy for each position, and they have a guy who they think is the guy for every position. They don't have like positions that are all up in the air all the time. You know that Beltran's out in right. You know that Berkman's at first. You know that Freese is playing third. You know this stuff. You know what I mean? And like, it's just. That's just, to me, seems like a baseball team built to play baseball altogether. Like a guy who does each thing. Every guy does five different things, and maybe none of them well. And that just doesn't feel to me like the way to build a major league ball club, especially if you're trying to win a World Series. And yeah, I mean, it was like lightning in a bottle in 2010 to be able to do that with a team and have people move around all over the place. But that's not consistently how you're going to win and score well. And so it's just, to me, I think, obviously, there's a lot to do with no one solidified themselves as the guy at these positions. But I think also it is that we didn't build the team around having one guy at each position and then backups. Like, everybody was like, well, he could be the backup or he could be the starter. I don't know. And that's just a really weird position to be in. And it's tough as a fan to look each day and go, wait, what? Who's playing where? Hold on. It's just bizarre.
Culberson?
Yeah, I know. You're like, Culberson. I don't even know who that guy is. Yeah.
Well, I find myself reading Twitter all the time when they tweet out the lineup, every day.
Every single
day. And it's like, all right, what do we got? What do we got today, guys?
I feel almost like the movie Major League, and at the beginning everyone's just like, who are these guys? And like, wait, what? Like, no one, it just doesn't make any sense. But
That's how they cut him, by the way. They do put the red slips in their lockers.
Oh, yeah?
That's how Gillespie was optioned back down at
AAA. Okay, he got the slip, and then he didn't take the snake and make the, the cross on it or anything. All right, so we're going to try out a new segment today before we finish this up with our normal stuff here, because we don't get too much mail, and, that makes sense. Nobody's really sending emails anymore anyway, right? Like, no one does that. If they want to talk to us, they do it through Twitter. So our new segment's called Tweet at me, bruh. And
I tweet at me, brah.
Just tweet at me, brah.
Yeah.
And so I'll eventually make
tweets
like,
are
bumpers.
Here.
Yeah, I'll eventually make some bumpers for these. But basically, I just, you know, throughout the week, I'm always checking in on the Torchcast Twitter, and I always seem to find stuff that makes me laugh. Today, I just noticed something that I'd forgotten about, but I did read about. But this reminded me and kind of made me chuckle one more time. It was retweeted by It's Sally Duh, and it's from NESN, which I don't even know what that is, but it just reminded me of this weird situation that happened recently that made
me
laugh.
The Northeastern Sports Network, yeah.
Yeah, Bryce Harper aggravating teammate Mark DeRosa's oblique injury with a forceful high five. And it just reminded me of how breakable that Mark DeRosa is, man. I mean, it's just sad. I feel for the guy because he's playing for a good team now, but he's not playing again. And he's getting hurt by over-exuberant high fives at this point.
You know, I feel like that's Mark DeRosa, though. He's that good of a teammate that if he's going to get hurt, it's because he gave you the most awesome high five.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, maybe like a fist bump or maybe just like chest bump or something. Like
a fist bump, he's going to break a knuckle. I mean, come on. He's got a bad wrist. You really want to start handing out knucks when you got a bad wrist?
You got to take the wrist out of play, though, I think, is really what you got to do. I mean, Pablo would know this. Pablo would have come to him and said, look, we got to change up our handshake because, you know, Pablo has a new one with each player. We got to change it up to take your wrist out of it. But Bryce Harper is not Pablo. Bryce Harper hits himself in the face with baseball bats. Like, Bryce Harper does not care about your wrist. And so when you're playing with this guy, be careful. That's all I'm saying. DeRosa should not be a Bryce Harper teammate.
I just have this image of, like, Mark DeRosa, like, trying to do a handshake with Pablo after a home run and Pablo breaking a Hammett bone.
That's how it happens. That's just two pieces of glass coming together. All right. Anybody else got any tweet ats us, bros? Bros?
I got one. All right. This is one that Charlie Culberson himself actually just reposted. It's from Adam Long 3.
He's been the last hour, by the way.
And rightfully so. Like the Giants pointed out, I think the SF Giants fans account pointed out that a ton of different guys from up and down the organization, like Wendell Fairley or like guys who are no longer with the team, Juan Perez, who was a Grizzly for a while, have tweeted at Culberson saying, hey, congrats. And you don't always see that when guys get called up. Not like this whole outpouring, even from guys that I've been following on my timeline that Culberson didn't retweet. I'm just like, whoa. Everybody's really super excited for this guy. So, you know, it's even if it's not a hype thing and he's a really good guy thing, the fact remains I kind of want to see him.
Yeah.
But at Adam Long 3 actually posted, this was a good one. He said, $5 says at Culberson 6 sleeps less than 5 hours tonight.
I think that's, I don't think anyone's taking that bet.
Seriously. I need to keep $5. I can't just hand it out like that.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do the day you come up to the bigs and get your first major league hit? What do you do that night? I mean,
Joaquin Arias, I don't think he didn't sleep at all, pretty much, but yeah. He didn't need to. He was starting the next day or on the roster the next day, rather. I mean, he probably got like 2 hours and that didn't matter. He was just like, no, I'm good.
I'm sure Culberson will be plenty wide eyed when he gets to the ballpark again. And I don't think it matters how much this kid sleeps right now. His whole
family's in town too.
That's right. Yeah, that's
true. Flew in from Atlanta.
He's got a pregnant wife at this point as well. So he's got a lot going on. The kid's got a lot going on.
He's just 23.
There you go. So, yeah.
Good for him.
All right. So let's move on to our new favorite guys. Or unless, Chad, wait, did you have one?
The only thing that I saw, because this is a new segment and. Mm-hmm.
And I just introduced
warning.
It about 2 minutes before we started.
On a lot of warning.
Just a little touching one from Sergio Romo saying, legit team win today, and my mom loved my spikes. Happy Mother's Day all mothers. Those spikes were pretty sweet.
Yeah, they were.
Did you see them going out there? Yeah. Oh, my God. My daughter loved them.
I'm going to have to look. That's awesome.
He's wearing pink, shiny spikes. I want one of those.
I was going to say, so now Maya wants a pair for herself for next game.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, sorry about that part. Sergio Romo breaking tons left. Of 6-year-old hearts.
I think we're going to see a lot of Twitter action about those today because those were awesome. Bringing back a little bit of the Brian Wilson orange spikes controversy without the controversy because he did it on Mother's Day. Good for you. By the way, his beard is pretty fantastic these days. Everyone keeps like saying, that Brian should get rid of his beard or whatever. Romo's beard is looking...
Romo's beard has really, it's kind of like two beards now. He's like bearding for Wilson because Wilson's not around. It's like there's additional beard.
It's true. He needs to continue the beard legacy while
his
Wilson
beard is growing
rehabs.
A beard.
Yeah, he's got his second beard.
He's probably going to be declared like closer just by virtue of beard.
He just co-opted Brian Wilson's beard and now it's just double beard. Exactly. That's all he did.
It's like beard.
Glued Brian Wilson's beard to his beard. All right, so let's move on to favorite guys, and I'll start us off. I'm going to pick the obvious choice. It's so easy, and I was glad I logged into our notes first, so I got to pick it. And that, of course, is Melky Cabrera. Melky Cabrera has been absolutely beastly. 22 for 51 over the last 11 games. He's got an 11-game hitting streak going. But overall in May... did somebody update this? Because it was 391.
It's 431.
431 now. Okay.
Wow.
And also
that's because it's 4 for 5 today.
That's right.
Yeah,
and
that's
also
a good point.
He's showing that he's got a sick arm. Any place you put him in the outfield, he could throw people out. And he's playing every single day, and he doesn't look like he's getting tired. He looks like he's just getting stronger. So I got to give it up to Melky, man. That was a fantastic pickup for us. And has turned, you know, panned out far better than we could have expected at this point. So, you can whatever is going on with the Giants, do not pin a damn thing on Melky Cabrera because the guy is playing out of his mind.
The milkman delivers.
Exactly. So I'm loving watching this guy play, and I'm so glad that we picked him up. Hopefully this just continues out throughout the season because he feels like he's just really consistent. It doesn't seem like he has, you know, a week of downtime or whatever. He just kind of does it. Whether he has a bad day or not, he comes out the next day and gets a hit again. So I'm pretty sure he's going to end up with another 200 win hit season this year. 200 win season, yeah.
With a 200, awesome.
200 hit season.
That'd be pretty
this year, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
That'd be impressive. Right,
what about you, Ben? Who you got?
So, I mean, I was thinking about picking this guy anyway, but I'd like to note that Willie in the notes actually wrote, "I left Blanco wide open, BTW."
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I got to go with Gregor Blanco. I mean, a guy who can go first to third on an errand, pickoff throw, a guy who can, you know, his speed has completely changed games. This is what we used to see out of Darren Ford as a pinch runner, except that Blanco has the bat to be put in the lineup and contribute enough to justify his being there. Ford really never had that ability. You know, you could put him into a game late. There's your bullet. But Blanco is more of a whole cartridge. You'll see his speed affect games all throughout the game as long as he's getting on base, and he's been doing that regularly enough to have an effect. So that's been huge.
Yeah.
So I got to go with Blanco. He's also been, you know, he's been perfectly effective in the field. He's a great fielder, great hitter, at least, you know, for what we were expecting to get out of him, he's been a great hitter. And so I got to go with Blanco.
And a super cool name, Gregor Blanco. Gotta love
White
that
Shark
name.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Somebody said, how long you think until they start making shark hats? I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Let's do it.
It's
we
coming.
Got the giraffe, we got the panda, now we got the shark. All right, Chad, new favorite guy?
All right, I kind of
I love
cheated
your second,
have...
by the way. I love that second pick.
Yeah.
Okay, I have
I
two.
Almost
I kinda...
considered it.
I mean, I had to tip my cap to Culberson, who got his first major league hit today, because you have to understand, he's 23 years old. That was his lifetime memory just created there. Even if he doesn't play another game ever in Major League Baseball, he gets hurt tomorrow, he gets sent down, he never makes it back. He has that ball. It's going to be on his mantle or in his trophy case for the rest of his life. He's going to be, you know, be able to show his kid, his unborn kid, his grandkids, whoever else. I mean, it's just one of those moments that
5 years in the minors. I mean,
yeah,
dad was tearing up during that game, and can you blame him? No.
I mean, as a kid, that's all I wanted to be, was a Major League Baseball player. And just to see a young kid realize that moment of actually getting to the bigs and, you know, cracking that first base hit is just something that I like to see all the time.
Yeah,
so
it'll always be.
And number two, of course, is Thunder Dan Marley.
Thunder Dan.
That was freaking hilarious.
That was the coolest
thing. That was what a catch, too.
Well, he was
I don't
like,
know
eating
how,
a plate of barbecue or something and just reached up.
It just
hit him right in the hand. It was beautiful.
He just sucked it out of the ether, man. And then it wasn't even that. I mean, his reaction was like it was scripted. He was just like, what?
Yeah, it was, and
just
it was
staring.
So funny.
He kind of had that semi-grin going on.
Yeah,
he's waiting about 10 seconds, and then he just casually flips it in his back pocket.
It was funny, though, because I didn't really notice it on the initial play, But I noticed the catch, but I was just like, I didn't notice that it was him. And then they go back to show the replay, and they're like, and then Thunder Dan. I'm like, oh, my God. Are you serious? Like, because I remember watching that dude. I think it was against the Warriors when they were playing live. And I went to go to a game at the Oakland Coliseum or Oracle Arena. And he just, like, destroyed one of our guys on a dunk. And he used to be like, a beast. And it was just funny. Like, I hadn't thought about that guy in such a long time. And then all of a sudden, there he is doing more beastly stuff.
I was looking for the video clip on YouTube, and I actually found the interview from the Arizona Fox Sports. And so they immediately went out there and got a microphone in his face. And they were asking him, what the hell were you doing here? You know, how did this happen? He's like, I had just finished a hot dog. Yeah. And you know that food is my number one priority. I was going over to the barbecue to get my second serving of whatever, you know, whatever was on the spread. I mean, he literally was just walking over there. He was still chewing his hot dog.
Yeah.
And that ball just literally flew up. I mean, he didn't even see the hit. He just suddenly, boom, a ball was up, just instinctively put his hand up, caught it, and then was like, I'm going to do what Shaq does when he was dunking with his left hand. Is just stare.
Yeah,
and
look, just stare.
Yeah. So he was totally copying Shaq with that, that expression. Great. So that was just great. Classic.
Ben, you have an honorary mention.
I'd like to give an honorary mention too. It's not his first inning in the majors, but you know, it's his first in quite a while. Shane Lukes, welcome back to the bigs. So maybe we won't get a chance to go and interview you in Fresno this year. And you know what? If that doesn't happen, I'm okay with that. I'm not going to complain at all because I like seeing guys get their chances. This is what we wanted from Mark Kroon last year, and Shane Lukes was my guy this year that I really hoped would get a chance to come back up, and he's gotten it. And you know what you've noticed? They brought Affelt back into the fold and they kept Lukes up. So for the moment, at least until Runzler or Surkamp or Wilson's not coming off this year. So, I mean, at least until somebody else comes off the DL, Lukes is on for the foreseeable future. And, I mean, you know, that's awesome for him. And he sounds like he cannot be more excited, especially to get Charlie Culberson up in the bigs with him. You know, they had been playing together in, I believe Culberson had been in Fresno. And that's just, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. And hopefully he never gives up an earned run the entire season.
Well, and I just think it's, you know, it's great that his daughter actually will get to, you know, I mean, his daughter's not going to remember any of it. She's not even one yet, I don't think. But she's going to be around for some of her dad's games in the bigs. And that's not something that I think Shane even was sure would happen to him in the rest of his career. You hoped, I'm sure, but I don't know if he thought that Macy Ann was going to get to watch him play, and he totally has.
There you go. All right, let's hate on people. Now that we've had a tender, touching moment, courtesy of Ben Lee. Chad,
let's get him.
Chad, hate on somebody.
No mercy.
All right, I know we had an epic at-bat last year, but I don't know if you saw Melky Cabrera's final at-bat today. That was a thing of beauty. I got to see if we can find that on YouTube.
Okay.
So I might have to describe it to you, but
yeah, go ahead.
A lefty was on the mound for Arizona. He was already 3-for-4 for the day, and this fastball comes in, just a straight fastball, a little inside, and Melky looked like he was having a stroke, or he was a 6-year-old who was just spooked by a ghost because his knees buckled, his arms kind of waved, and his head turned backwards. And they were laughing about it on TV. And then so he backs out of the box and he's just laughing. He's shaking his head because it wasn't even a curveball or an off speed or anything. Yeah, it was just a fastball. He completely didn't see it. I mean, he just was scared shitless about it. Oh, just broke the clean tag.
Yeah, no worries.
Very, very, very next pitch was probably going to be a strike. And this time he decided to swing at it. But this time it looked like the stroke was actually happening, because he could only feebly swing at it with one arm. His left arm kind of, his grip split apart. His left arm swung, you know, about a foot over the ball, and his back foot kicked out of the box. It was the ugliest thing I've ever seen out there. And for two fastballs in a row, I'm thinking, this guy's 3-for-4 leading our team in average. What happened?
Yeah.
I think something medically might be wrong with him. So yeah, then the very next pitch, same thing, fastball, and he looked a little bit better. He swats at it across the plate. His back foot literally flies up into the air as he's swinging at the ball. He looked like a ballerina kind of trying to hit it. He hits this high hopper up the middle, and he beat out an infield single.
Yeah.
Actually, that's how he got his 4-for-5. He comes back, and he's talking to Roberto Kelly, and he is just hanging his head, laughing, covering his face. I mean, it's just one of those at-bats where He didn't deserve that base hit, but no, somehow
things are
somehow pulled it out. Yeah,
that's how things are going for the guy right now. I mean,
you're hot.
And dropping.
Yeah, to see a guy who's hot right now look that bad at the plate and still get
that's pretty hilarious.
That's why I love baseball, though, stuff like that.
Kind of swings you expected from Santiago Casilla. That's the thing.
That's a Santiago Casilla.
He just never needed him.
Oh,
so for all we know, that's a Santiago Casilla swing.
Yeah.
That's where he learned it, right? Yeah. All right, so I'm going to hate on Paul Goldschmidt. Here's the thing about this guy. He's not like Hairston or
Bunyan.
He's not like some guy who just has this massive reputation of killing the Giants always, forever and ever and ever. But this year, he only hits home runs against us, and it's just really annoying the crap out of me. It's like, dude, you disappear as soon as you leave. You know, a game against the Giants, and you know, the guy is like a legitimate player, and he's, you know, he's got some tools and stuff, but he hit one home run against us, and then no home runs again, and then hits another home run against us. It just annoys the crap out of me when guys do that.
I mean, how is that fair?
Yeah, it's really not fair. If you're gonna be bad, be bad against us too, please. Okay, all right. So that's it. That's all I got on that guy. Just annoys the crap out of me. Ben, who are you gonna hit on?
You know, I'm going to go after the guy that has been kind of like Scott Hairston this year, though, and that's got to be Willie Bloomquist. I mean, I feel like I haven't even gotten to watch all of the Arizona games. I actually went to a couple of the Tigers A's games at the Oakland Coliseum, which is cool, and I didn't get to watch today's because I was actually at work where our air conditioner blew up and we actually had to evacuate the store. That was fun. well, not exactly blew up, but blew out. Anyway, so it felt like every time that I looked down at my, you know, my phone would go off and be like, hey, so Arizona just scored yet another run. I looked down. Every time Willie Bloomquist's name would be on there somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like I don't really get it. It's like he has like his I'm a baseball player cleats and then his I'm playing against the Giants cleats. He just like shows up with different underwear or something. I don't know what it is, but whenever he's playing against us, all of a sudden Willie Bloomquist turns into this like baseball monster. And then as soon as we leave, it's like he's Bruce Banner, and he just gets really mad when he sees orange, and he just hasn't played against Baltimore yet. I don't know what it is, but
well, I'll just break it down for you because you're not wrong. In May, the guy's batting 125, and yet against the Giants, he's batting 375, two RBIs, three runs scored in what, six games? So, yeah, the guy's tearing it up against us, and that's just stupid. That's just really stupid. All right, so. A lot of good guys to hate on, a lot of good guys to love. Let's see if we can figure out why we will win it all. Can we figure out any reasons why we will win it all? I'll try my best. And this is the best I could come up with today.
Yeah, this is fortune cookie time.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say the Dodgers are not the best team in the National League. Whatever their record is right now, that is, they are not the best team in the National League. And they will fall off. Us, on the other hand, we cannot play worse than we've been playing, I don't think. I mean, I guess it's possible. I guess feasibly we could go out and make five errors.
I mean, it's always possible.
Yeah.
We could walk out there and suddenly turn into last year's team.
So, I mean, logically, it has to get better then, right? 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 It has to get better. It can't get worse. I mean, I feel like every time I turn on a game that I haven't been watching the entire way through, as soon as I turn it on, we have three errors and we're losing 4-1 or something like that. And it's just not what I'm used to seeing. I mean, I definitely haven't thought of the Giants as being like a fantastic defensive team for a while here, but they've always been a team that at least catches the ball, you know, doesn't make errors.
That is at least adequate on defense.
Yeah, but at this point, that's not even happening. So it's just I just feel like these two teams can't keep going in these directions for the entire season. So the Dodgers are definitely going to come back to earth at some point, and the Giants cannot. I mean, we're 500 team while we're playing really, really poor baseball. So I feel like we're not going to be this poor of a team all season long. And there you go. That's the best I got. Chad, you got anything better?
Related to the Dodgers?
Sure.
I think we can win it all if Kemp, Ted Lilly, who was sporting the 2.03 ERA, and Kershaw all go on injured reserve.
Okay. Let's send out the ninjas. I think we could do this.
But you know, on my drive home, I was thinking about the Giants because of the impending recording here, and I was starting to get a little panicked, thinking, God, you know, they got to fix this, and there's this problem, and no matter what lineup they throw out there, they're just not scoring many runs. And we happen to be listening to the kids' channel on satellite radio, and that classic song from The Lion King came on, Hakuna Matata.
All right.
And it just made me kind of relax a little bit.
There you go.
No worries.
No worries, man. The rest of your days. All right, Ben, do you got anything?
Yeah, you know, I got to go with the reason that we're going to win it all is because at some point, probably around late June, maybe early July, Brian Sabian is going to give in and go after somebody who's completely inappropriate for the team that everyone is going to pan. That's going to be a completely ridiculous pick. And either that pick is going to turn out to be brilliant in a sort of unexpectedly Cody Ross, Pat Burrell kind of maneuver, or whichever minor prospect we pick up behind them turns out to actually do really well in AAA, gets called up, and then takes us the rest of the way. It's going to be something where we all sit there and we pan the stupid choice that he made and then completely luck out.
Okay.
Because that seems to be how we do things around here in the last couple of years. Instead of just completely failing at making trades and doing transactions, we almost fail and then something inevitably goes right. Unless his name is Miguel Tejada.
Well,
or Orlando Cabrera.
I think.
Or Bill Hall.
I think we seem to have the ability to do that from time to time, and hopefully hopefully we get lucky again with some type of a Pat Burrell, Cody Ross type guy, and that'll be cool. By the way, Pat Burrell, you get to see him in every game these days. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, he was behind home plate tonight.
Yeah, watching him chew and spit tobacco into a bottle.
Really gross.
Yeah. Really, really gross. All right, so that's going to do it for TortureCast, episode 30, the Orlando Cepeda episode. And I want to thank my co-hosts, Ben Lee and Chad King, for being here with me. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us individually, at ChadK21, at Fried Duck, or Freed Duck, however you like to say it, or at Willie Dills. And you can also follow the entirety of us at TortureCast. You can also check out torturecast.com where we blog. You can go to Facebook and like us there as well. And I want to thank everybody for listening to episode 30. Giants are 17-17, and we can't play any worse, right? All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next week.
Boom!
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.